Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Thomas Cook Limited Q3 FY20 earnings conference call hosted by IIFL Capital Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Abhijit Akella from IIFL Capital Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Faizan. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning, and thank you for joining us on the 3Q FY20 post-results conference call of Thomas Cook India Limited. It's my pleasure to introduce the senior management team of the Thomas Cook Group who are here with us to discuss the results. We'll begin the call with opening remarks by Mr. Madhavan Menon, Chairman and Managing Director, followed by the management team, and thereafter we'll open up the call for a Q&A session. I'd now like to hand the call over to Mr. Menon to take it forward. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Abhijit. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I must thank all of you for even taking the time out to participate in today's call despite, I'm sure, the various distractions that each one of you has around Saturday's budget. Let me use today's call to focus on the performance for quarter three 2019-20. In terms of performance, I think this is a quarter where we are quite satisfied with the way we performed. If I go straight down to the numbers, the consolidated revenues grew by 11% to 17.2 billion. And if I go straight down to the EBIT number, you will notice that our EBIT grew by 10.25% to 434.7 million. Now, this is by any means a good performance. If you look at it from a qualitative point of view, I believe that the major businesses, that is, foreign exchange, the inbound business, corporate travel, and MICE, at a consolidated level, did extremely well and have not only surpassed last year's numbers but have also achieved our own internal have exceeded our own internal targets. Now, in terms of the other metric that we measure very closely internally is the cash balances, the cash in the form of bank deposits and other investments, which is at 14,137 million as of December 31st. And this has generated in excess of our average free cash generation of approximately 2 billion rupees. Having said that, I would that we have seen, as all of you know, over the last three quarters faced a lot of headwinds, and therefore I believe that we have actually managed to sustain the business through all these headwinds. I do not believe that the headwinds have gone away. All the news reports around the coronavirus do represent some form of a threat to our business. Too early to tell, but from what little reports I'm getting in from our various businesses across Southeast Asia, there is an impact, and we will have to wait and see. With that, I will hand over to Mahesh Iyer for his comments.
Good morning, everyone. Just adding to what Madhavan said, getting into some of the specifics around the businesses. To move on first to the financial services, I think we've had a very good quarter on the financial services side. Our revenue from operations in the financial services side grew by about 13% from 625 million to 710 million. And consequently, the EBIT on the financial services side moved dramatically from 145 million to 207 million. This performance is the backdrop of a very strong growth on the retail side, where we saw over 14% growth in our top-line sales for the retail side. The B2B side of the business, which is corporate and wholesale, also came out with very impressive numbers, registering a double-digit growth close to about 10%. And the borderless prepaid card, one of the pledging segments that we have actually witnessed over 42% growth, registering a total volume of 133 million for the quarter. So if I add the cumulative effect of that, it's what is visible in the EBIT numbers for the foreign exchange segment. Getting to the travel and travel-related segments, as Madhavan said, we had a mixed bag. the B2B side of the business, which is corporate and MICE, performed very well. The B2C side, which is more the holidays on the international and domestic side, was a little subdued, as you will appreciate that there was this slowness in the economy, the challenges that we spoke about with in terms of the Thomas Cook UK shutting down, the CNK closing down, the impact of the negative sentiment in the market. All of that played a little on that side of the business. But despite that, our top-line sales on the holiday side grew about 8%. Our profitability was a little strained. On the inbound side, we'll explain a little more because while you look at the revenue, they represent a flat trajectory. As far as the EBIT on the travel side is concerned, it looks as a degrowth of 36%, but we'll explain that and I will leave that for Debashish to explain as to what that impact is. It's more of an accounting impact than anything else, but we will explain that in the subsequent conversations. But overall, as we said, for Q3, we are pleased with the performance, both from our foreign exchange and the B2B side on the travel, which includes inbound MICE and corporate travel. And I'm happy to take further questions on that when we go along. Over to you, Debashish.
Thank you, Vansh. So I'll quickly run through the quarter and the YTD 9-month numbers. As you know, revenue from operations went up from 15.5 to 17.2 billion, which is about 11% increase. At the EBITDA level, this translated to a 43% increase in EBITDA from 558 million to 801 million. And the EBITDA margins at overall level showed an improvement from 3.6 to 4.6%, largely because of the mix. In terms of EBIT, we moved the EBIT up by over 10% from 394 million to 434 million. The interest and the finance cost show an increase largely because of the Ind AS impact, where a part of the rentals is now being shown as the interest and finance cost. That's about 4.5 crores of interest can be attributed to that. At the net PBT level, the figure of 216 million last year came down to 181 million this year. In terms of YTD, on a YTD basis, the revenue has grown by about 9.6% from 52 billion to 52.4 billion to 57.4 billion. EBITDA has improved by 34%. That's from 177.5 million to 177 crores to 238 crores. At a PBT level, the number went down from 75.5 crores to 55.3 crores. As you know, this has been a very tough and challenging year for the travel business, and we have been able to hold on to our course in spite of having severe disruptions in the travel industry. In terms of Mahesh has already talked about the quarter segment revenue, so I'll not detail on that anymore, and we can take questions on that. But for the 9 months, financial services grew its revenue by 9%, which is an extremely good performance, one of the best years that we have been having in financial services business so far. On the travel side, it's been relatively flat. We just saw 1% improvement in revenue. On vacation ownership, we saw about 8% increase. And of course, we also, this is the first year for DigiFort Imaging Services. So that ended there up, it's 9 months, 426 crore. In terms of segment results, again, financial services, which is Forex, foreign exchange, performed brilliantly. It's an increase of 30% over last year, and with improvement in the EBIT margins from 30% last year to 35.9%, which is really significant. Travel margins actually degrew from 3.5 to 2.7%, but there is element of accounting in that, which I'll try and explain quickly. So on the inbound side, and you know that this quarter is the season for the inbound business. This is also the quarter where we demerged our HR business, which included the shares of Quess. So during this demerger, the other thing that also happened is that we merged TCI, which houses the inbound business, into Thomas Cook. As a result, there are some disruptions in the business processes. The business could not carry out its invoice while the business went on in terms of servicing, getting customers and servicing them. It could not raise invoices on time. There has been some delay during the month, especially during the month of December, and some disruptions on payment to suppliers, etc. as well. This is all getting corrected in the month of January. So there is a bit of timing difference that will happen, and you see the impact of the positive impact of that. While you see the negative impact in this quarter, the positive impact will flow back in the Jan-March quarter. And for the full financial year, you will see the, you know, the, you'll see inbound business performing at its full potential. I think that's about it from my side. I would now like to hand over to Ramesh Ramanathan, and he will talk to you about Sterling. Ramesh, over to you.
Thanks, Devashish, and good morning, everyone. I'm going to be talking about the quarter, the year-to-date 9 months, as well as a significant development in the vacation ownership business. So first, the quarter. During the quarter, our total income, Sterling, rose from 675 million last year to around 742 million this year, a growth of around 10%. For the second quarter running, we have had an increase in membership sales. So the membership sales, and this is at the total value, which was at 218 million last year, has now at 333 million, a growth of almost 53%. So for the, even in terms of units, because the membership sales is now, because of, as you are aware, Ind AS 115 impact came in from last year. So we can take only 4% revenue in the top line and the balance goes and sits in deferred income. What is relevant is the quantum. So even that has gone up from 752 units to 930 units during the quarter. We continue to open more resorts under the management contract scheme, which means at zero capex. So we opened one during the quarter, two more are on the anvil during this quarter. In terms of occupancy during the quarter, it went up to 65 from 63 of the comparable quarter last year. ARRs have been soft for the last two quarters. One last time due to disruptions on the rain and therefore, you know, people cancelling. And this time because of the CAA protest, there were a lot of cancellations in the north and east. And this happened in December. However, we have maintained the ARR. The ARR is roughly at the same level as last year. As regards EBITDA, we are at 27 million for the current quarter against negative 21 for the same quarter last year. Now, in terms of the 9 months performance, total income is at 2092 million versus 1913 million, a 9% growth, same as in the quarter. Again, the number of membership units has grown by 18.5% to 2636 units, and occupancy is at 66% for cumulatively for the year. ARR has also grown marginally for the year to 4519 against 4452 last year. As far as the EBITDA is concerned, for the 9 months, we are at a negative of 5.2 crores as against 17.7 crores negative last year. That has improved. I want to make a point here that in the last two quarters with increase in the membership sales, under Ind AS 115, the more we sell, the more negative it sort of becomes, in the sense we book all our expenses, as you know, all the fixed expenses are booked up front, whereas on the revenue front, we recognize only 4%. Now, this is where I want to talk about a development. As of 1st January, we have a majority of the, not all the sales efforts in membership have been franchised completely into sales and marketing franchises. What this does is it allows us to straight line expenses as per Ind AS 115. You are all aware that the sales and marketing costs of membership is around 30-odd%. Now, hitherto, that is, till December 31st, we had booked all these costs up front during the quarter, whereas from January onwards, we will be able to straight-line these expenses. And what happens, as an experiment, we applied whatever principles of this arrangement into the previous quarter, which is the quarter which we are discussing now, just as a, you know, ready and rough, you know, estimate. And the quarter, you know, the EBITDA turns out positive. The membership EBITDA, which otherwise was at a negative of 34 million, becomes a positive of 37 million because we are able to straight line expenses. What this means is that from now onwards, we'll have 4% of revenue recognized, the balance going to sitting in deferred income. Similarly, in terms of part of the expenses, now these expenses don't cover things like office rentals and so on, but it covers the entire sales structure, the sales executives, the telemarketing executives, their salaries, travel, the whole lot. And that translates, you know, the whole thing can now will go and sit as part of it will get booked up front. That is again equivalent of 125th, and the balance will go and sit as deferred expense. So the net effect is that we are looking towards the membership accounting not dragging us down, and therefore the results looking far more positive from the current quarter onwards. That's all from me. Thank you.
We can open the floor for Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Manoj Bahiti from Carnelian Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I have a couple of questions. First one is like if you can give the impact of like the recent unfortunate event of coronavirus, like especially like how do you see like the coming quarter? Are you seeing good amount of cancellation happening on account of this?
Okay, if I can just answer your question, since you have a couple of questions, let me answer this immediately. Look, I think it's too early to tell what the impact is. The only impact that we have right now is that we have a inbound business into China, mm-hmm. Which is a relatively small business that falls under Asian Trails, has been impacted. There are no visitors into China at the moment, given the current situation. Mm-hmm. In terms of the other business that is sort of associated with China is our Hong Kong outbound business. Mm-hmm. And you will note that in the last quarter, they actually did well. Mm-hmm. Their bookings on the outbound side for the Chinese New Year were strong. So those were not affected. And in reality, there is no impact of the coronavirus in terms of travel of citizens of Hong Kong at the current time. So it's early days. We will have to see. Our expectation is that we will see some slowdown in the business into China. There is a slowdown of business out of China, but fortunately, none of our other subsidiaries are dependent on Chinese traffic for their profitability. So to that extent, we have a limited impact, but it's early days because, you know, I expect that people will now start questioning the impact of coronavirus to any destination that they go to. That's a question that we will all ask ourselves, but early days.
The line for the current participant got disconnected. We'll move to the next question. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Venkat Samala from Tata Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So I have two, three questions. So the first one is there was a recent development in the recent budget. So wherein the packages from the foreign tour operators were to be taxed at 5% TDS. So just wanted to know how much impact that would be having on you, or if at all you'll be affected by that. Second thing is, I just wanted to understand how the average ticket size per package and the average duration of a package is getting changed in the, say, the last 1 year or so. And if you can throw some color as to the initiatives that you might be taking to mitigate the impact of the coronavirus from your end, whatever can be done. Thanks.
Okay. This is Devashish here. I'll try and answer some of the points that you have raised. The first question is on the 5% TCS that's been imposed in the current budget.
Right.
On all remittances relating to travel. It's actually on travel and as well as forest remittances. Now, you know, this is in the nature, this is a tax collected at source. And effectively, the traveler or the person who's making the payment will get credit for this tax payment while filing his tax returns. So it's more of a cash flow issue, it's not a cost issue. Because you pay, instead of say, for example, 100, you will pay 105 to begin with. But the 5 rupee credit, you will get back while filing your tax returns. And obviously one assumes that somebody who is buying a foreign tour package would also be paying taxes. So if you look at it that way, we don't see, you know, don't see too much of the impact on that. However, it's too early because this measure, as you know, came out only on Saturday and today is just, you know, the first working day after that. So we'll have to see. Obviously, you have to also educate customers as to how this effectively doesn't impact their life at the end of the day. But we'll have to, you know, sort of watch and see how things are.
So are you sure that for all the that for all the customers, the TCS will be reimbursed?
It's not a reimbursement. It's an adjustment from their final taxable tax payments.
Okay.
So that's TCS. In principle is that, and TCS is not something new to the Indian market. It's been there for a while, and TCS is always adjusted. It's effectively another form of TDS. It's just that we collect it and pay it to the government.
Okay.
Your second question was about, you know, how the duration of packages is changing over a period of last 1 year or so.
Right.
So we covered this in our last analyst call also, we talked about this. What we have seen this year is a shift from a long duration packages, like instead of a 2 week, a 14 day package or a 12 day package, people are opting for shorter duration, which is 9-10 day packages. So especially for this is primarily for Europe, US, that sort of destinations. So we have not seen, you know, number of customers going down, the number of passengers going down substantially, but what we have seen is that there's the change in duration. But also at the same time, I must tell you, the increasingly what you also see passengers doing is, or customers doing is, taking two holidays in a year instead of just one. So in the end, it should all square up.
Sure.
Your, I think, third question was on the coronavirus, and I think it's a little too early, as Madhavan covered in the first answer. It's probably a little too early to gauge the impact of that. As you pointed out, there is a limited impact in some of our, some of our subsidiaries, which are very, really very, very small. But we are sort of adopting a policy of wait and watch to see whether this spreads. As long as it stays contained in China, it is something. But does it go beyond China, then it becomes something else altogether.
Sure. Sure, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Milind Karmarkar from DNB Portfolio Managers. Please go ahead.
Hi, this question is regarding Sterling. I just wanted to know that PAT after exceptional items for 9 months FY20 seems to be minus 408.85. So if you could explain what are the exceptional items which are included there?
There are no There are no exceptional items there.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened is the maximum impact. You know, we are in a situation where the more we sell of memberships, the more negative the PAT becomes.
Mm.
For a simple reason, the revenue is only 125th, whereas the cost is all loaded up front.
Okay.
And that is, there are no other exceptional items.
Mm.
Yeah,
so that will change from next quarter. That's what you are saying, because now that it has been franchised. So will that change from next quarter?
We are expecting it to. It will have a very great impact because, for example, if let's say the value was 100 earlier of one unit and we booked 4 in terms of revenue,
right,
we were booking almost 30 in terms of expenses up front. Now that 30 will get divided by 25 years, so we will be booking only 1.2 something.
Correct, correct.
And the other half of our business, which are our resort operations, are profitable, so overall we expect it to be profitable as we go.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ramnathan. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Claire Barnes from Opolum Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Could you please comment on the 45% increase in finance costs, which now seem to be running at over $1 billion a year?
Yeah. Claire, is that the only question or you have something else?
Is that the main one for now?
Yeah, okay. So on the quarter numbers, you know, if I sort of do a deep dive on the interest cost, interest and finance charges, and do a like-for-like comparison, you will see that the operating interest, the actual interest cost has moved up from $61 million last year to $77 million this year. And I'll come to the reasons of that separately. The other finance charges, which are primarily bank charges, credit card charges, cash management charges, have moved up from $116 million last year to $129 million this year. And there is a new element which has come in, which is the interest on lease liabilities. Now, this is $47 million. Now, this is coming out of the new accounting standard Ind AS 116, which came into effect from 1st of April of 2019, and which basically reclassifies the lease rental payments into two parts. It's into the depreciation and interest. Now that interest comes and sits here. There is no, this was not there, obviously this is not there in the last financial year, and that's why the numbers are disparate. As far as the interest cost, we also saw the interest cost going up from $61 million to $77 million, and that's primarily operating interest in operating interest, a large part of that, out of the $16 million, the major part of that, about $12 million out of that, is on account of the new subsidiary that we have, which is DEI, the one that we acquired on 30th of March. And $4 million is the balance is in the other subsidiary, which is not a big number anyway. Does that explain things?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch. So what is the overall breakdown of the debt?
You asked for the interest breakdown.
Sure.
The debt breakdown.
You have said in the past that my past understanding was that most of the debt was at Quess. You've said in the past that you have no debt at parent level.
No, I don't think that understanding is correct here. Let me clarify this one. Quess has moved out of accounts, you know, for the last 2 years or so. So the debt that we see on our balance sheet, first of all, at a net debt level, we are negative debt because the cash and bank balances exceed the debt. At a standalone level, there is no debt. However, there is debt in the subsidiaries. And the interest cost is on account of those subsidiaries, largely. Now, each unit has its own working capital requirements and therefore has working capital loans. And that's where the loans are coming from. Maybe Claire, in the interest of time, we can have a separate conversation, we can set it up, and then I can take you through the debt profile, etc., and then, you know, we'll probably get a little more clarity on this.
Okay. But total debt at September was $3.2 billion.
Okay.
Total debt net of, you know, with more cash than that, but anyway, total debt 3.2, and you're paying interest of over a billion. So,
that's a consolidated level. Now the cash does not is the cash sits in some of the units like the standalone Thomas Cook. Now,
but I mean, okay, debt of 3.2 and interest of 1 is an interest rate of 30%, unless the
debt levels are
artificially low at the end of the quarter.
I don't think you are getting my point. I'm trying to tell you that the interest cost is not operating interest. It has credit card charges, bank charges, and cash management charges, which are classified as finance cost. So if you divide finance cost by the debt, you will obviously get a very large number. The interest cost also includes the bifurcation of lease rental into the depreciation and interest. And this is a statutory requirement. So we cannot just take the interest number as stated in the financials and divide by the debt to arrive at a rate of interest.
0.6, just see how much that
is. Okay, so which is why I am saying that probably it's better to take this discussion offline and then we can, you know, talk about the actual interest. I did give you the numbers for the actual interest cost during the quarter. Okay, and we can then, you know, we can then talk about which entity has debt and which doesn't, and then probably it will clarify.
Okay, my problem with taking it offline is that I never get a reply to my emails to you,
But Claire, I've never got a mail from you. If you write to me, I can assure you, I can promise you, and there are, you know, about 70 participants on this call, I can promise, they make a public promise that I'll respond to you in 24 hours.
Okay, thank you. If necessary, I'll ask somebody else to forward. It may be falling foul of your junk filters or something. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of VP Rajesh from Banyan Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. A question on the interest and finance cost. You said about 4.7 crores is coming from the Ind AS change. And if I were to take it above the EBIT line, because just to look at comparable numbers from last financial year, then your EBIT roughly comes to 40 crores about 39, 40 crores. Is that the right math? Just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, that's the right math. I mean,
okay, got it. So basically, the EBIT was flat in this quarter. The second question is that in your interest and finance costs, you said there is about 12.9 crores of bank charges and other things that you explained. Is it pertaining to primarily your FX business, or this is across all the businesses?
This is actually across all the businesses.
Okay.
See, as we one factor that I should point out is that, you know, we are increasingly going online, okay, and as we grow online, the payments we also accept, most of our payments are actually happening online through usage of instruments like credit cards, and as a merchant, obviously there are MDR charges that we have to pay. So this is not something that we can wish away. It will be there. It's sort of part of the business. So the finance charges. The other point that I must mention, that it's not that it's a complete charge, it's a debit to the P&L because it's recovered, but the recovery goes through the revenue line. So it shows up in two different parts. The recovery of those credit card charges, etc., comes up through the revenue line, whereas the cost sits in the finance charges. So there is a bit of anomaly here.
Okay. And then there's one more on the 7.7 crore of interest cost. What is the debt corresponding to that? Is it 300 crores or is it a higher number?
So the external borrowing, total external borrowing as of December 19 is 356 crores.
Okay. So the way to think about it, this is the interest cost pertaining to 356 crores of debt, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And then you mentioned the cash is about 1,400 some odd crores.
Yes, 1,413 crores, yes.
Right. Could you just break it down, you know, and this would be helpful, just a feedback, to say that, you know, what is the actual cash that belongs to the company versus the cash that belongs to the customer, which is not really, you know, which is more like a deposits made by the clients, etc., so that we have a real sense of what is the, you know, cash available to the shareholders.
Actually, if you go down that route and, you know, if how much is advanced from customers, etc., we also need to see, then see how much is the advance that you have paid to vendors. Okay, so it should not, we just should not take, it's like taking the debtors without considering the creditors or vice versa. So you need to then see both of these things together. Only then you'll get to understand what's the overall picture. Otherwise, it's a very unfair way to take out all the payables from the cash without and considering that none of the debtors would actually come back. It's effectively that. But to answer your question, you're probably trying to work out what's the float. The float that we had on the BPC card was close to about 650 crores, which is the money that we receive on our prepaid cards. And the balance is obviously the cash that is there either in Thomas Cook or with any of the subsidiary companies.
So you're saying that roughly 750 crores of cash belongs to the business, which is not used for your working capital or anything of that sort, right?
Cash does not sit idle. If there is cash, cash will get used in some form or the other. And we are in a business of foreign exchange where the cash requirement fluctuates daily. And therefore, it's highly volatile. Because, and Mahesh can probably explain this better, but let me try my hand at this. On a day when the rupee-dollar exchange rate fluctuates dramatically, say the rupee becomes a little more expensive, there will be people who are having dollars will come out and try and sell those in the market. And on those days, our rupee requirement goes up because we need to buy dollars from those people. And therefore, we will need to use our cash reserves. So I am not saying this cash is idle cash for us. So it gets used in some form or the other.
Right.
Or rather, most of it. There is, of course, fixed deposits. There is a large quantum of fixed deposits that we keep. Some of our foreign currency fixed deposits are being held in overseas bank accounts, etc. State bank. But apart from that, the other cash is sort of, there is some amount of usage of that in and out. So there is no idle cash other than those deposits and investments.
Right. So I think I understand your point, but is it fair to say that the only cash that belongs to third parties, which is not the company's cash, is 650 crores? Is that the right way to think about it?
You're saying the BPC cash. Yeah, it is restricted in a way, in the sense that, yes, it is for a particular purpose.
Okay. All right. And then on the vacation business on slide 18, your average unit realization went up more than 10%, like 3.5 lakhs. So what drove that?
Ramesh, would you like to come? Yeah, please.
Okay. Two reasons for the average unit recovery to go up. One is we had a price increase of around 6%, but that was only for part of the quarter because it came from almost mid-November. The second one is also increased number of upgrades coming in. We have two revenue lines in our membership program. One is the new membership units that we sell. The second one is the upgrades that we do. People who have bought a particular unit moving up and or buying some more points. So the average unit recovery is a combination of both these numbers. The upgrades went up and therefore the average unit recovery is also gone up.
Okay. And any plans of major capex on the Sterling business side?
No, as I explained, we are going on a major program of management contract resorts. This would mean that as we move further, we will have very little capex, but for renovations in existing resorts and IT and digitalization to some extent. The plan is to grow very aggressively on management contract resorts, so that means no capex whatsoever.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate you answering all the questions.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nihal Jham from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much and good morning to the entire management. I wanted a couple of data points to start with. Sir, is it possible to share what was the quantum of delay in invoicing for this quarter?
I cannot give you an exact number because that again would probably tantamount to a forward-looking statement. But overall impact, the impact of the invoicing on the profitability will be in the range of about 20 crores.
20 crores. That is helpful.
Yeah.
And the second...
20 crores, it could be a little more than that.
Yeah, the ballpark figure is helpful.
Yeah, the ballpark figure.
Absolutely. The second thing is DigiPhoto is obviously an acquisition which got consolidated in this quarter this year. So how has the YOY growth been in that business for us?
So let me just come in and address that. As far as DigiPhoto is concerned, I think they have had a very good quarter despite all the challenges like as we mentioned on the call. You know, this is a business that operates across the globe with Far East and Middle East being a big market. Middle East has been going through a bit of a slowdown. But despite that, they had a very good performance. They acquired some new sites there, which is effectively the Dubai Frame, the Dubai Aquarium, and the Dubai Ice Ring. They got some two large contracts in the Atlantis, which is the Atlantis Bahamas and the Universal Studios Beijing. So from a pipeline point of view, that total acquisition or the new contracts that they have inked in the last quarter that will run up in the full year of FY21 is close to about $40 million. So that's the new pipeline of businesses that I've got. For the current quarter, which is Q3, on a comparable basis, their volumes actually went up by about 7-8% and profitably improved by about the same percentage. This despite the challenge that we saw in parts of Hong Kong, which was the unrest that we had, and in parts of the Middle East. Despite that, they had a very strong performance. Just to give you some metrics around their performances, the number of partner addition actually moved up from 115 to 137. The number of sites that they operated last quarter was 227, this quarter is 257, and number of transactions was 1.56 million, which went up to 2.58 million. So these are some of the metrics. So effectively, it was a decent quarter for them, and they've been running on the expectation that we have put up for the business that when we acquired. So for the current quarter, their profitability in terms of the metrics was about 10 crores, and I think it's kind of trending on line of expectations.
So the transaction increase is for the 9 months or for the quarter, 1.56 to 2.58?
That's for the quarter.
So that's more than 7-8% volume growth that you mentioned, or is it that the number of sites is something you are counting as volume?
No, we are counting the number of transactions as volumes because our revenue is recognized on number of transactions.
Okay, sure. And just to understand this business model, which geography would contribute the maximum revenues? Would it be the Middle East, if I understand right?
I think between Middle East and Far East, the share will be close to about 80% between the two, and rest is spread to USA and parts of China and stuff like that.
Africa.
That is helpful. There will be a few more questions. Maybe I'll take it offline. Just getting on the cash part. So, Devashish mentioned that around the float on the business is around 750 crores, that's in the BPC cards. In addition, yeah, is there considering, you know, the nature of the business that it is, there is a minimum requirement of cash, as you said, you need to keep because of, you know, the Forex volatility and also because of advanced payments at times. So, is there a kind of a restricted cash that is minimum required and then possibly, you know, you want to look at what is the cash which is freely available for us for acquisitions or for dividends in the future out of the current 1400 crore that's sitting on the books?
There is, unfortunately, no single answer on that one, because technically if I need cash for my working capital, I can always fall back on my overdraft limits. Okay, so essentially there's nothing called restricted cash, maybe other than the BPC float.
Sure. And, you know, now that for Sterling, obviously the focus ahead will be on management contract. And I said the capex requirement will be reasonably lower compared to the earlier years. So what is the thought process on using the incremental cash? If you could just give a sense, whether it will be a dividend policy or even in terms of acquisitions, what are we looking at? That will be helpful.
So, look, I think if I make any statement as a response to what you're asking, it'll be viewed as guidance or futuristic. So at this point of time, I'll stick to the statement that I've always made. We will evaluate acquisition opportunities as we go forward. But I can assure you that dividends will also get focus as we go forward. Obviously, the budget has changed some of these equations. And therefore, we will consider both these options as we go forward.
I look forward to more on this. That's it from my side then. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ritwik Sheth from OneUp Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning and thanks for the opportunity. So a few questions. Firstly, on the advance booking for summer 2020, how is it looking like so far?
Mahesh, would you like to you have asked a question on the advance booking for the summer, and I request Mahesh to talk about it.
Okay, so currently it's a little too early to comment on the forward bookings, and I'm saying more specifically because if you look at it, we operate three brands on the outbound space. Obviously, I'm going to keep the Hong Kong operations out of it, but we've got SOTC and Thomasook, the two brands that we operate on this space. You will appreciate that we had the news of Thomasook UK coming in the last week of September, hence we delayed our launch for our summers, whereas SOTC went ahead with its launch early in September itself. So from a pipeline point of view, our pipeline started a little later as far as Thomasook is concerned, but as far as SOTC is concerned, it started much early. From a view at this point in time for Q2, which is calendar Q2 for FY20, which is the peak of the summers, our forward bookings almost like 7-8% growth over the previous year at this point in time. Albeit we are seeing, as Devashish mentioned, and there was a question in this regard previously in terms of average transaction value, we are seeing some change in patterns as how customers are traveling. They are preferring the more shorter product, the shorter format of the product, as a result of which the ATVs are impacted. But the silver lining there is that people are taking more frequent holidays, so we are getting the same customer travel with us a lot more. And that we believe is far more sustainable. So the quick answer to your point is we are seeing about 7-8% growth for Q2 at this point in time.
So far, okay, sure. And sir, given all the disruptions or some issues in the last 12 to 18 months, from starting from Jet and then now till coronavirus and all that. So, last 12 to 18 months have been a bit subdued for the domestic and some part of outbound and then the Thomas Cook issue and all that. So, taking a step back and taking a 2 to 3 year view, what is your outlook on the travel segment, and what kind of growth is possible, in next 2 to 3 years?
Okay, look, I think what has happened in 2019 is now behind us. I think the impact of coronavirus as we see it right now is hopefully limited to this and nothing more. Obviously, a pandemic is a pandemic and, none of us can sit and speculate where that will go. My expectation is that growth will come back into both domestic as well as international as we go forward. It may take a little time to get back to the the 2018 or 17 growth rates.
Right.
I'm fairly confident that in during the latter half of 20 and into 21, we will see us going back to normal growth rates again. And I must add here that both Mahesh and Vishal are sitting here, and I'm going to ask them to add their comments. But I think we are recalibrating all our packages, our products, to meet these changed circumstances. So, earlier, the change circumstances is always how do we deal with the OTAs, with the various things they're doing. I think that situation has changed and now we need to look at multiple other circumstances and recalibrate it. And I think given the domain knowledge we have within our companies, we are actually able to do that far more efficiently than we would have done earlier. But I'm going to ask Vishal and Mahesh to make their comments.
Hi, this is Vishal here. I think Madhavan has already put it. We believe that the growth will be back. Even at this point in time, despite the headwinds, we've had a strong quarter. We spoke about that earlier, especially on the B2B side of the business. So, and even on the B2C side of the business, we are looking at about 7 to 8% growth in terms of our forward bookings for summer of 2020, which is a big season. We have recalibrated our entire portfolios as long haul and short haul, and short haul is becoming an area where we are seeing a lot of uptick because of something that Devashish just mentioned, because people are preferring shorter duration holidays, and obviously proximity to India and around is obviously seeing a lot of is seeing actually a far better demand. Our theme actually when we are going into summer 2020 has been affordability, because we saw some of these headwinds coming in. So our packages are designed in a manner so that we can de-risk our business from a long-haul dependency perspective, which is where we have traditionally been doing extremely well. So that's where we are. We believe there is an inherent demand in travel, especially leisure travel. People never cancel their programs. They generally postpone it basis what is the environment at that given point in time. So growth will be back at some point in time. On coronavirus, at this point in time, it's too early to comment, and I think Madhavan and Mahesh and Devashish have already commented on that.
Okay. So the other point I want to add to what Vishal said in terms of an outlook for this industry, we've been seeing a 14-15% growth, and we believe that that growth is there. More importantly, the point that Vishal emphasized on, which is affordability, that's something that you will see visibly into the communication that we are making to the consumer. We actually launched, because when the customer is coming into a bit of a sentiment-related issues, we got to make the package more affordable and also give him easy options to afford that holiday. So we've launched the easy payment plan where the customer actually pays 10% upfront and the balance 90% is paid only 30 days prior to departure. So that gives him the flexibility to plan his finances also. So I think it's more about structuring your packages slightly differently to get back to the growth momentum that we had in 16-17, and we believe the industry is ripe for it. There is enough and more opportunity for us to kind of grow to that 15-20% growth.
Right, right. This is very helpful. And a couple of bookkeeping questions. Firstly, capital employed of other unallocable has sharply increased from 600 crores to 1200 crores quarter on quarter. What is this regarding?
Give us a minute, please. Just getting the number.
Yeah.
I guess we'll come back to you. I'm just trying to, because I'm trying to look at those numbers.
And just one last one. I wanted to reconcile the cash flow. Is it around 130 to 140 crores in the 9-month FY20 before any working capital changes and capex that we would have for the group?
How did you get a cash flow number? Because we haven't given out any cash flow indicators.
Yeah, so just was doing some backward calculation, depreciation, and adding back the reported losses of the vacation.
This is sounding very complex. So what we have decided to do, and I think we spoke about it in the earlier analyst meeting, is that we'll give out our cash flow numbers on a half yearly basis whenever we publish our balance sheet or the statement of assets and liabilities. So we'll give it out in September and March, but we'll not give it out in the, because we don't really draw up a full-fledged balance sheet on 31st of December, audited balance sheet, and therefore we are not working out a cash flow number.
Okay, sure.
We don't want to do a rough calculation because that can be erroneous, and this is a becomes a public number which can give very wrong impressions in the market.
No problem. Okay, thank you and all the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manoj Baheti from Carnelian. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question again. In fact, I got dropped off from the last question. So just coming back on my first question, like I understand like China and Hong Kong business got impacted. That's a direct impact. But are you seeing like some inquiries or some signs of cancellation of travel outside China, let's say, means people traveling on holidays to some other destination, but because of this, the way it is increasing day by day. So are you seeing some early signs of cancellations of travel to non-China territory on account of this?
No, Manoj, I think you missed the latter half of what
I got dropped off from the call.
No issue. Let me just repeat for the sake of clarity. It is too early to tell if there are any cancellations. And I actually, my last sentence in that is, every time you travel abroad right now, you're going to ask yourself the question, what is my potential exposure to the coronavirus? I personally believe that if this gets contained and does not become a pandemic, this will wear away over the next couple of months. In fact, I will refer to an article that appeared in the New York Times this morning, mm-hmm. where they're actually saying that all these viruses normally tend to come in China during the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
Winter time. And that same article talks about, medicines that are used for HIV, anti-HIV treatment that are going to be used to treat the coronavirus. In fact, India is one of the large manufacturers of this particular type of drug.
Mm-hmm.
And so my expectation is that over the next 2 months, they will at least bring some semblance of containment. And if that is achieved, I think it will have no impact. The other point I want to make is, unlike in the case of SARS several years ago,
mm-hmm.
The world got to act on it at that time only after it had spread. Mm-hmm. Here you will note that the minute the alarm was sounded in China, governments around the world have actually reacted very fast and closed borders and all sorts of things. So I think, look at a small country like Hong Kong today, their borders for all names and purposes are shut on Chinese tourists.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think the world is reacting much faster than it did on SARS, and therefore I have some hope that the impact on our business will be limited.
Right. Thanks for this clarification. And also, second question which I had is on the accounting policy change or the structure change in Sterling Holidays business, how it allows us to defer the expenditure? Like, I just wanted to understand, like, what kind of arrangement allows deferment of expenditure which was earlier not allowed.
Okay. Manoj, what happens is I presume you are aware of what happens under Ind AS 115.
Mm-hmm.
Revenue is straight lined over that period of the obligation, in our case 25 years on the membership.
Right.
Whereas all expenses which are not incidental to sales
mm-hmm.
are booked upfront.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, hitherto we could avail of the straight lining of incentives and offers that we made to customers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ind AS 115 also says that if the sales is completely given out to somebody, for example, I appoint a franchisee
mm-hmm.
who employs his own people, so salary, offices, the marketing costs, everything is taken care of by them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pay them as commissions mm-hmm. on sale. Then those expenses can then be straight line.
Okay.
So that is what we are doing. We are paying all the arrangements that we have made in sales and marketing. We have converted all our sales, membership sales into franchisees. We have been working on it for some time. And from 1st January, we have effected this, and therefore, the expenses other than incentives and offers, which we were straight-lining hitherto, will also get straight-lined.
Okay, so if I understood it rightly, it means that even our internal sales team will move to that franchisee, it will be a...
They've already moved as of 1st January.
Okay, it's a different legal structure, or it is like indirectly owned by us only?
Yes, it is not owned by us anymore. They do it, but we guide them.
Okay.
So we provide all the inputs. It's like any other. We already had, for example, some franchisees. The guys who sell in our resorts and all that had people on their team. They used to do their own marketing. So, that was a very small component.
Mm-hmm.
Now the entire component of sales has moved into that system.
Okay, so so your entire team, the sales team who was earlier selling, will move to that entity, and even advertisement, promotion, all those activities will be taken care by that entity?
If they do, then and I pay them on sales, then I can straight line. We will still be doing brand and so on. For example, the lead generation, which is our major marketing expense in this case. If they do it on their own and I reimburse them as, you know, as sales incentives, then I'm allowed to straight line. But if I, you know, the company Sterling were to do an advertisement or a brand advertisement, we still have to book all those costs up front.
Got it, got it. A last question I have on DIS. How you are seeing in terms of return on your capital or IRR basis, the investment over next 3 to 5 years?
Sorry, as I understood, as I understand, you are looking for some sort of guidance on the return?
Yeah, in fact, like whenever you have made this acquisition, like some kind of internal benchmark you might have used, I'm not looking on future guidance. I'm just trying to understand like what kind of capital allocation or what kind of internal hurdle rate at which you are working while making these kind of acquisitions.
Okay, so you see the, it is... The philosophy of acquisitions are slightly different. So in some of these cases, for example, when we brought over the DMS business in 2017, we knew very clearly that it's a loss-making business and it will take, at that time we said it will take 3 years to even turn around. So obviously in 3 years we did not expect a return on equity or return on capital employed from that business. But we knew that, you know, it's a little longer duration, it's more than 3 years. Okay, so we don't have a standard template because it's not that we are going out and looking for acquisitions. We keep on evaluating, keep on waiting for opportunities for a value buying proposition, rather than going aggressively like a private equity and getting, you know, trying and seeing everything through the same template. So in short, the answer is that we don't have a standard template. But in the longer run, we endeavor to deliver a 15% return on capital employed.
Got it.
But that period would depend on the state of the business, at which state of the business that we have bought it.
Got it. Okay. Thanks for taking my question. Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Okay. Thank you once again for taking time off this morning. I'm sure it's a busy morning for all of you. Now that is the first working day after the budget. But thanks for taking time off and coming on to the call to listen to us. We will see each other again at the end of the next quarter. Thanks so much.
Thank you. On behalf of IIFL Capital Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.